Hey, y'all. Welcome to Co-Parenting Past Chaos, a podcast that gives you a raw and unfiltered insight on marriage, divorce, the crazy adventures of co-parenting, and so much more with your hosts, April and Lauren. Not only are we best friends, we are also the wife and former wife of the same man. Join us each week as we take you on a journey inside our wild and chaotic lives and show you how we were able to forge and maintain a positive co-parenting relationship while collectively parenting a lot of kids with a few husbands. We're definitely not professionals and we'll probably get you into more trouble than you bargained for, but what we do have is a sense of humor, street smarts, and a few decades of experience under our wife, mom, and divorcee belt. This ain't your mama's podcast. Welcome to episode 154 of Past Chaos.
In Chaos. We need to change the name to In Chaos. It's never not chaotic.
It isn't. It's sad, but true, but funny. Hey, it could just be boring.
I mean, you know what? Honestly, that is my one bucket list item now is to have a boring life. Okay. I don't think it'll ever happen. That's why it's on my bucket list.
Our lives are kind of boring.
Sometimes. Are they though?
Sometimes. There are days.
Okay, there are moments.
You're right. There are only minutes. It's okay, though. It's okay, right? Everything's okay. All right. So, right before we started recording, two things happened. I don't even know how to handle this. Okay. The first one I'll tell you was super traumatizing. I got a notification on Facebook that someone tagged me in a photo in my town's history museum. And it was from when I was...
I thought you were going to say somebody sent you a dick pic. I was way more excited about that. Instead, April's geriatric ass is in a museum.
So Lauren thinks it's hilarious that I'm old enough to be in a museum. I mean, it's my town's museum.
Let's not get too
excited. But anyway, the next thing was so exciting. My best friend just bought me tickets to a Montel Jordan concert.
Yes, she did.
I am beside myself.
I am excited to go.
If you know me, you know when I exercise, when I run, when I want to be happy, I turn on Montel Jordan radio on either my Pandora, my Amazon Music, iTunes, whatever. That is my go-to.
Well, and I remembered this because of yesterday's event, which if you want to tell everybody what we did.
Oh, I'm telling them. Okay. Don't worry. Yesterday, Lauren and I, along with Heather, ran a half marathon.
And we didn't die.
We didn't die. And we actually...
did pretty
we
well.
We set this goal for ourselves, like a very realistic goal, I feel like. And we succeeded. I mean, we did better than the goal.
I did, yeah. This was my first half marathon. And you've done them before. Mm-hmm. Heather has done them before. And you guys, I would both call you guys runners. Like, you guys are genuinely people that enjoy to run, right? I have never enjoyed running. It has never been my thing. So earlier this year, I was like, you know what? I'm going to try to become a runner. It seems like people think it's fun. So,
you know, for me, it was like I was at a point in my life where it was either jumping off a cliff or running. And I chose to run.
That's kind of how it was for me. That's exactly what it became for me. And then what was it earlier this summer? Heather was telling me how there was this half marathon. I was like, oh, well, now this gives me an add on to my goal. I've never done one of those.
Well, Heather and I signed up for the Battleship Marathon, which is in Wilmington. And then COVID hit. So it canceled it. And we've always said, okay, we're going to do this again. Well, we all three said months ago we were going to do this race.
Yep.
And as it got closer and closer, I was like, you know what? I really can't commit because I don't know what's going to be going on during that time. I mean, there may be a new show out but that I need to commit.
She'll commit 12 hours before.
Well, I really did. 12 hours before. I was like,
She looked at me. I had just gotten home from getting, like, I think the last of my items I needed to purchase, right? Like a new pair of shorts or whatever. And I get home and she's like, I think I'm going to do it.
So will you go back out?
She's like, will you go back out and get me? I was like, yes.
But I'm so glad I did that.
I am so glad we did this together. Honestly, it would have, I probably never would have done this if it wasn't for my friends. And B, like, the accomplishment that I felt and the pride to have finished it with my best friends was 10 times greater than doing it by myself.
Oh, for sure. I was just shocked that I survived and not in the back of an ambulance going across the finish line.
I was really surprised at myself. For someone that's not a runner, like, genuinely, last year you couldn't ask me to run a mile. Like I couldn't do it. Never in my life have I been a runner.
I'm so proud of you. I got to watch that.
Yeah.
Part of you grow and it's so exciting.
And I think the coolest part was the boys. The boys who have trained with me because I take them on these bike runs. But, you know, I run, they bike ride and they hate it. But they actually ran across the finish line with me. I'm going to cry thinking about it, actually. That was a really cool moment.
So I did start crying during the race. And I thought, I'm going to cry at the finish line because it's just, you know, you're very emotional and you're about to die because you're extremely tired. You've just ran 13.1 miles. But I remember the last time I ran my marathon, the latest one, Roy and Tanner were at the finish line and I did cry just because it's like, it's just so, that's my baby that's standing there watching me. And then this time we asked Tanner to go and he's like, yeah, that's not going to happen. So I wouldn't have had anybody there, but in the middle of the race, your girlfriend brought the boys. Yep. So they were all standing there.
And they were cheering us on.
And I did cry after I passed them because it was just like, oh, wow, these babies are here to support us. That was so emotional.
I cried running past them at that exact point you were talking about. And then there was also somebody that was holding up a sign that said, run like a mother.
Oh, yes.
And I got very emotional.
Yes.
There was something about that. And then, you know, you saw, I think just because of how this series of events that happened this week with Eliza Fletcher, seeing different people have her name written on them or on their shirts. It was extremely emotional for me.
Yes.
So it just pushed me, honestly, all the way there. It was what a cool thing to do.
I know. I think that is what that is the reason, because the day before we ran the half marathon, I went out for a run that morning because you had been so emotional and thinking about Eliza Fletcher. I've been a runner for years. I mean, that could have been any one of us, any woman in this world that gets up and goes out for a run and then never comes back home.
I literally wake up at the same time that she does every morning and I go either work out by myself or I go run by myself. So like it is, in fact, every one of us.
Yes.
Moms that just goes about their day. And like somebody said this when they were talking about it, you know, that's the only time you have for yourself is that hour. You're waking up at 4:30 in the morning to take 1 hour out of your day just for you as a wife and a mom and a mother. And that really hits home when people are, you know, talking about it. Cause yeah, that's what we do. We get up at the ass crack of dawn to have an hour to ourselves.
That peace.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was all of us.
The other emotional thing was it was the Marine Corps half marathon. Mm-hmm. So for an entire mile of this course map,
they call the Hero Mile.
Yeah. The Hero Mile were pictures of fallen Marines, sailors, soldiers, airmen. Very emotional.
The whole thing. I mean, it was a great day, though. The weather, to me, the weather was perfect. It was raining.
I don't mind a run in the rain.
I actually love it.
Don't, but for the first over 7 miles, probably seven and a half.
I think right at 7 miles,
it rained. And it wasn't a hard rain.
It was a good
rain. But it was a steady rain for the entire time. Mm-hmm. And then it got a little sunny, but it was really a nice day.
It was.
And it turned out to be great.
To say I accomplished that and to say we all did that together was a good one. That was one for the memory bank.
Now we're going to just do it again.
I think so. Yeah. I want to do one.
Maybe this time I'll train.
Yeah.
Just saying, hey, I think tomorrow I'm going to wake up with my geriatric ass.
We're a little
marathon.
We're a little sore today.
No, I'm a lot of sore. Like I'm having trouble sitting on the toilet and getting back up.
I think this may, in fact, have been the first time in my life I've accomplished like setting a goal and actually committing to it. Like I really did train for this in my own way. Like I did train and I can't believe I did.
I know this is so mundane and so this is minimal. I want to say this before we move on. There was a time, gosh, I guess 10 years ago, because I think that's when I started running was about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more. I can remember thinking, I will never run. I could never run. I could not run a half a mile, let alone 5 miles or 6 miles or 10 miles. I just can't. There's no way. And one day, and I'm not even kidding, it was like Forrest Gump. One day I just got out and I just started running and I didn't stop. I just kept going. So if you think you cannot do something, I promise, if you want it bad enough, you can do it.
I agree. And you find your fuel.
You do.
I found fuel, whether it
was anger. I became so proud of myself.
Yep. Anger, frustration, just needing release and freedom. I started running and I ran with that mindset and those purposes. And, you know, you find good music. That's my other biggest thing. I found music that I could like just get lost in.
I've solved so many of my problems with me and myself in my head
running.
By running.
I agree. Yeah. It's been extremely therapeutic.
Mm-hmm.
And the high you get afterwards, worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely worth it.
The pain you feel, not so much.
I'm not as in.
I took off my socks pain. And they were full of blood. That's gross, but that really is true.
Heather wore a hole through her.
Yeah, her big toe was sticking right out. You know, it's just, these are the things that you just won't forget.
I will never forget, about to cross the finish line, she looked over and she's like, do you want to hold my hand when we run across it? And I was like, oh, that's really sweet. And then immediately she's like, wait a second, I need you to look at me first. Do I look hideous right now? And I said, bitch, we just ran 13 miles.
Yeah, you look hideous.
This is not a beauty competition. We both look awful.
I knew I looked hideous. I didn't care.
There was a girl in front of us and she took her shoes off and was running in her socks.
Oh my.
I was like, listen, you get it, queen. Yeah. Get it.
I wanted to, but I'm glad I didn't, because I would have probably scared people with those bloody socks. Ugh. Anyways, okay, we did make it through the second week of school. That's exciting.
Yay.
Barely. Tanner started his shit again this week, and I was
not
like,
as bad though.
No, but it was just a glimpse of like the last year. So it was a little PTSD. And I was not having it. So his dad was trying to light into him, but he wouldn't answer the phone for him. And as a blended family, and Roy and I co-parent, and we do co-parent well, I know it's my job to facilitate that and to go to Tanner and be like, hey, you better answer the phone for your dad.
Yes.
You know you're going to get your ass chewed, but hey, you shouldn't have been a jerk. So, right. But he won't. He still hasn't. But guess what? His daddy coming home. So
oh, I can't wait.
You're going to get that ass.
Yep.
And I'm here for it. And I'm excited
he
about it.
He's use his daddy voice.
Okay. You know that we have this rule. Lauren is more of the mom that is easier to talk to about certain things. Like you take the bad parts, like the sex talks and those types of things. That's you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the kids have come to me before and I'm not good. And I get sweaty and nervous. And I tell them things that aren't right.
They're not the correct answer.
So Lauren's like, okay, either do it right or don't do it at all. So most of them, I just don't do it at all. I'll be like, wait, ask your mom, you know? Well, this time Jack came home from school. He was like, mom, I need some advice. And I heard him telling you this later in the day, but I wanted to save this for the podcast. So he's like, I need some advice. And I was so excited. I'm like, oh my God, somebody wants my advice. Do you know what a shit show my life is? Sure. I'm going to give you
from
advice.
From an 11-year-old.
Okay. He's like, so I have a crush. And I was like, okay, tell me about it. And he's like, well, here's the dilemma. She's my best friend's sister. And I just thought for a minute, April, you're best friends with your husband's ex-wife.
Apple tree.
Right? So I was like, well, there's nothing wrong with that. And he's like, what do you mean there's nothing wrong with that? It's my best friend's sister. I'm like, your mom's my best friend. And he just looks at me and he says, okay. I said, your mom is my best friend and she was married to your dad. Oh, okay. And he just walked away. That was it.
I guess they never really...
They don't put it together.
No. That's interesting. I guess I've never really
we haven't talked to our kids about it. The whole world knows, but we have forgotten to tell our kids.
Oh, they were the last to know.
Our kids are fine. We promise.
Everything's fine. Oh, wow.
I just thought that was interesting.
Oopsie.
He was like having this huge life dilemma, but...
Like, I guess he's never connected the dots because we've actually never really connected them for them.
No. I think maybe they were so young they don't remember that you were married to their dad.
I don't think Jagger and Jet do at all. I mean, I know Jet doesn't.
For sure.
Jet doesn't have a clue who
Jet
his mom
thinks
and dad
that his
is.
Moms are us, and yes. He doesn't really know that he has
his
a dad.
He doesn't know anything.
Which is fine.
I'm okay with that,
it's
honestly.
It's fine with us.
Jagger's kind of lost in the sauce, but that's just who he is as a person.
Yeah.
And then Jack obviously remembers the most, but I don't think, again, they're men, they're many men,
yeah.
So they just really aren't connecting dots, but we've also not been really that.
No.
Oh, oopsie.
Yeah.
Is that a parenting fail? Probably.
I mean, probably, but.
Well, another one for the therapist.
Listen, or we could just be doing such a good job that they don't find anything weird in our situation or scenario.
My kids have me as a mom.
Yeah.
That should really just sum that up for you.
You're all weird. So
I am, in fact, the butt of that joke.
Yeah. Literally. You really are. Okay. I don't know if I talked about this last year on an episode. Maybe we did. Dress code situation.
Oh, yes, we did.
In school. Okay.
We did because they had like a hoodie situation at Tanner's school.
Yeah, so Tanner had his hoodie situation in school. So he texts me last week during school and he's like, Mom, I just got yelled at for my sweatshirt. And I was like, what? What are you? I remember what he was wearing because I dropped him off at school that day. And he's like, yeah, a teacher came up to me and told me that my sweatshirt was offensive. Okay. Well, his sweatshirt said, I heart hot moms. It was a male teacher that said that to him. And I don't find anything as his mom. And I know I can be very strict about things, but I'm also a very lenient mom when it comes to things like that. And I don't find that to be offensive in the least.
I don't at all, especially for a boy. Like, first of all, boys getting dress coded obviously is not probably as common as girls getting dress coded. I used to get dress coded all the time for very inappropriate things. And I was the inappropriate child.
No, I've never been dress coded.
I got dress coded for wearing a shirt one time that said they're real across my titties. Yeah. So, I mean, like, that makes sense. But like, I heart hot moms. I mean, I love hot moms too.
Yeah.
I love them too.
I told him, I said, you know what I think I'm going to do? I'm either going to go get one of those shirts or I'm going to make my own shirt that says I heart hot dads. And I'm going to wear it to a school function.
I'm going
to
buy him that shirt that says do MILFs, not drugs.
Yeah.
Look at that. It's positivity here.
I mean, there are a couple of shirts Tanner has that are a tad
that his sister brought him.
Yeah. And they do that because they like to get my goat.
I think
and I know that and it's fine, but that to me, yeah, we're going to have a problem because I just don't find that to be offensive.
I don't even in a little bit. It's a brand.
It's a brand and it's fine. So let's talk about something before we get to our main topic. I already know the answer to this. And I don't know. I think there's a saying when you ask a question that you already know the answer to, it's something.
You're stupid.
I'm stupid, but I'm going to ask you this question anyway.
You're brave.
Do you have tact?
No.
I know.
Why did you... Hell no.
I just want to know. Like,
fuck no. Hell no.
People that have tact. I have tact.
You do.
Sometimes too much.
Yes. I agree with that.
And you will tell me, stop sugarcoating. I don't know that having tact and sugarcoating, I don't feel like it's the same thing, but I guess they could be like distant cousins.
Yeah, that's fair.
I want to be able to tell people things. Because in my mind, so I have a filter. In my mind, sometimes I'm like, what a fucking idiot. But what comes out is, oh no, it's perfectly fine. So how do I
don't know because there. I can tell you from the time I was a small child, I've been told that I have no filter. And I don't really think I was born with one. I don't know how to put anything in front of what my brain is thinking as it comes out of my mouth. I can't.
Is it easier for you to have no tact with your friends or do you just have no tact period?
I just have no tact period. It depends on the situation. In a professional standpoint, I can try to have tact because those people don't know me. But with my friends, if I tried to have tact or tried to be tactful when speaking,
fake.
Yeah, and you would know.
Yeah.
It would honestly come across more offensive. It would because you'd be like, you're being phony.
I don't feel like I'm shocked by a lot just because of, hello, look at our lives. But sometimes people will say things and I'm just like, what in the actual F? Hold on. Like, prepare me for what you're going to say. Like your girlfriend, for instance. Okay. I'm just going to use that. This weekend, she's telling a story and she just blurts something out very
obvious.
I don't want to say, yeah, I guess to her it was obvious, but to me it was like, oh dear God, you act like that's just no thing.
Well, but I think that people that don't have tact, when it comes to just not having a filter and just saying exactly, you ask a question and then you get a direct answer, you at least know that that person's not fucking with you. Like, they're not lying to you. You can't, you have
but
to.
There wasn't any tact there that I was like, that's unbelievable. You've got to be joking or you shitting me.
That's, see, I've always been like that. Like, you're almost so honest that
yes.
people think it's a lie.
Yes. That's uh-huh. what it was.
Yeah. I've been told that my entire life.
There's no way.
There's no way true. What you said is true. You're sketchy. Because they just say it very flippantly. Or as like my sister likes to say, we downplay everything. Like, because you can so casually say something or directly say it, it seems like you're downplaying a situation.
I want to be able to have tact, but also be so straightforward, especially with my friends. Okay. If somebody's doing something or they're in a relationship that I'm like, hey, let's talk about this. I'm seeing some things that you're doing maybe that aren't going to be good.
Well, let's just put it this way. Our friends know if they want a soft answer, they come to you. If they want a, you know, what do they call it? Tough love.
Mm-hmm.
They come to me.
Yeah.
I don't get asked a lot.
No, you don't. You don't get asked for advice a lot. Maybe that's why Jack came to me this time. Because he's like, yeah, my mom's going
to
tell
but
me.
But see, sometimes he'll come to me and ask me like the hard-hitting questions.
Because he knows I'm going to lie.
But yeah, but like I'll get the hard-hitting one. And I think he tries to see if I'll, it's almost like he's testing me. Like if he's going to stump me up and see what kind of reaction I'm going to have. But I always give him a very direct answer and a very dry one because I'm giving him exactly an answer. Like the other day he asked me what a word meant and I just dictionaried it. I gave him the exact definition.
No.
And he just looked at me and he goes, okay. And then walked away.
With my kids. Couldn't be me. Wouldn't do it. Nope. Wouldn't do it. I'd be like, go ask your dad. That's not me. I can't. There's certain things that make me so incredibly uncomfortable. I physically can't do it.
Sometimes your kids want to see you uncomfortable though. And that's why they ask the questions. Yeah. See, I will never let my kids see me uncomfortable. Oh, No.
I'll be like, get out of my face. Mm-mm. I don't want to do this. All right. What we want to talk about for sure today is breaking past habits in relationships.
Because we have no experience on this.
None whatsoever. Please listen to us because clearly
we know what we're talking about.
We have all the answers. I think we have discussed this a little bit before, but how do you break habits? I know for me, probably one of the hardest things I've ever done is not bringing my past into my future. I'm not good at it.
Well, no, because if your past has a huge, you know, impact on who you are and now who you kind of identify as because you were brought in with trauma, you know, it's really hard to move forward without carrying that with you or communicating that to a new partner. That's even harder because you have to explain to them, hey, I'm going to react this way sometimes, or this is how I feel about situations because of this past. I'm not necessarily taking it out on you. This is just the situation that this is the cycle I've been in. And that's, communication is not my strong suit. So of course I don't want to communicate that. I just want to like pretend like it doesn't exist and then, you know, let them guess.
Because sometimes I think for me, maybe other people are like this, communicating is a sign of weakness. If you're honest about a certain thing, it shows a little bit of weakness or a little bit of vulnerability. And maybe it's very uncomfortable for you.
Probably. I don't like communicating because I don't like giving someone the opportunity to misread me. And I feel like when I communicate or I am being vulnerable, I'm giving them that opportunity to potentially misread what I'm trying to portray or get across. And again, this goes back to tact.
Yes. Also, it depends on who you're communicating with and if you feel safe with that person or in that situation. Because there are certain people, narcissistic people, for instance, that will take the things that you tell them, the secrets that you divulge to them, or just the honesty that you give to them, they're going to use that against you in the future. And if it's been done to you in the past, you're scared to do it in the future.
Absolutely. You are scared to do it because you're like, well, it's easier for me to just never communicate anything. Just keep it bottled in. I know how to handle that much easier than if someone was to misuse this information and use it against me.
You know what happens is that information grows bigger, but that bottle doesn't.
Nope.
And it's going to crack. Mm-hmm. You're going to crack and that's going to be the end.
Yep.
That's not good. Getting into a relationship after you've been single for a while, I think this is the hardest thing. You were single. I mean, you dated guys, but you were like real, real single for a
good long time.
A good while after John, before you got into a serious relationship, I'll say that. That's hard. You, I think, get into this routine with yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And after, I know for me, I was single for 2 years after Jerry and I divorced. You get into a relationship almost with yourself.
And you should.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, but you're doing things for one.
Yeah.
Table for one. Dinner for one. I mean, I had two kids, but they were very small. You start dating yourself. You just build this life around. And for me, it was my friends because that was my... Those were my people that helped me through things. Once you bring in this new person... It's really hard.
Oh, it's extremely hard. Sometimes it's not. I've been in relationships where it hasn't been worth it. You know, like that disrupted my peace that I spent all these years creating. And now you're trying to like ruin that or change that. No. Like I've been doing this without you. I can definitely speak from experience in saying that like going from being single and falling in love with the single life, because I did. And some people don't. Some people really need a person or are seeking a person while they're single, jumping into different relationships or pining over the fact that they're alone. I didn't. I really, really enjoyed being single. So for me, branching out was kind of like, okay, maybe not being single or trying this relationship is what I'm supposed to be doing now because I've become this whole person as being single. Let me just tell you, tread lightly. Mm-hmm. Be as picky in your singleness as you are jumping into a relationship.
Yeah. For 2.5 years at least, because Roy and I, we lived together the last 6 months before we got married. But for 2.5 years, I lived in a home with my two daughters and it was just us. We had a routine. We had this good thing going. And then now this boy comes in. Mm-hmm. And not that he disrupted us in a bad way, because we enjoyed having him, but it was a disruption. And it was something that we all had to work hard to make peaceful, if that makes sense.
Yes. I think from both partners, you have to realize that there was a life before you mm-hmm. guys. And there will be a life after if it doesn't work out. You can't come in and want to disrupt someone's life or change everything just because it doesn't fit what yours is. That was their life before you. It will maintain their life without you.
That is an interesting point. And I really like that, because while, yes, that person that's coming into your life, they're changing things as well. But when you come into a situation where there are children involved, we did have our own life and we had a stability in the three of us. Now this man's coming in and, you know, he does have to understand that we had this before you mm-hmm. and you can't come in here trying to reinvent the wheel.
No.
You're a guest for a minute.
Yeah, you know? It is. Yeah,
you got to work your way in.
It's a compromise. It's figuring out what things you can compromise or meet in the middle on or potentially change. But like, don't go into it with the mindset of, I'm going to fix all of this situation, make it how I want to make it. No.
When you're single like that, you become very independent. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I was independent. I did everything on my own for my kids, for myself. I was the one. I was the person that paid all the bills. I was the person that worked in my household. I cooked all the meals. I did it all. And then having someone come in, it's weird because, number one, they're asking to help. What do you want in return? What am I going to owe you? Yeah. I don't like that. I don't want to owe anybody. I'd mm-hmm. rather just do it on my own if it's going to be thrown up in my face. Now, Roy wasn't like that. He really did come in and he was very patient with us. Roy was also raised in a house of boys. So he's coming into this house full of girls and he's like, what the hell?
Oh, God.
What are these people? And it was the same thing when John moved in here. It had been Tanner and I. And now John comes and he brings three other little people. And it was utter chaos. Mm-hmm. Like, you've gone from Tanner and I were very independent. We are so much alike in a lot of ways where we enjoy our quiet time. Mm-hmm. It was no longer like that in our home. So it was very hard to transition from being two independent little beings to now having three very dependent little people. And then this grown man that was pretty dependent as well.
Well, I was going to say, I think you have to figure out ultimately first, is there two independent people that are coming together? Or is there one independent person and one codependent person? Because then that really changes the dynamic in the household and in the relationship and everything. When you have one person that is very codependent or used to codependent relationships, which is fine. But if they're stepping into someone who is very independent and they're coming into this environment, you guys are both going to not see eye to eye on a lot of things. And I think recognizing that first individually and seeing how you can kind of meet in the middle and say, okay, you know what? This person is going to be a little codependent in some areas. Let me see how I can facilitate or provide that for this person. And then the other one, knowing that that person is independent, can provide some space, some freedom, a little mm-hmm. bit of, you know, distance at different times. You have to both read each other and respect that. You can't, especially with codependent people, you can't walk in and create a codependent person.
No.
With someone that's independent, you have to respect that they are independent.
I will tell you two different scenarios because, you know, I've got a lot of marriages under my belt, so mm-hmm. I can give some information on this. For my marriage with Roy, when he came in, I had been on my own for a while. So I'd grown to just almost enjoy doing it on my own. That's the only way that it would get done. Mm-hmm. I immediately trusted him. There was just something about his energy that was just very calming and very trusting. So I allowed him to take over whatever he was willing to do. I was a single mom, very young single mom of two kids, and I worked probably 60 hours a week. I welcomed the help, and he was willing to give it. Now, when we divorced, I became independent again. And it was so hard because I'd been so dependent on Roy, and he did everything, and he did it the way I wanted it. So it was easy.
Yeah.
Then I had to become independent again, and it sucked. I hated it. Because who takes care of you when you're sick? Nobody. You're now this very independent woman. Who helps you in the kitchen? Nobody. Nobody helped me do anything. I had to do it all on my own. Okay, let's fast forward. In comes John. I didn't want to turn over anything to him.
Yeah.
I didn't trust him that way. And I was scared that if I did fall into that codependency again, that it was all going to be ripped from me again. And I was going to have to learn how to do everything on my own. And it sucks.
John, I don't know how he was in your marriage, but for me, in ours, he was a codependent person. And then we eventually both kind of became codependent, I think, on each other. I was independent before him. I was on my own and I was single versus he went from one marriage literally into like two. Mm-hmm. But during our marriage, he was the codependent one, which was fine because I had been independent for so long and I was willing to be his codependent in this relationship. And so I did take care of a lot of things. And he was an equal part for the most part. But then, like you said, you get divorced again and you have to relearn how to be independent because I, at some point, had gotten lost in codependency with him in our marriage because I very much became the thinker of not just three children, but also my husband because I was. I didn't do everything for John, but did my brain think for his sometimes? Yes, all the time. When you're married to a John, your brain never shuts off for the things that you are dealing with or thinking with through the marriage. So being independent was a little bit like shell shock again. I was with the same person for all of my 20s, and then to be single and not have literally anyone, even John, was a shell shock. But then once you find your feeding again, I think it's like, okay, this is where I'm safe. I'm never letting anyone ruin this again.
Oh no. And in our situation, I don't know that John was codependent. I don't think it was because he couldn't do things. I think it was situational, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yes.
He brings in three children and himself, and there's this nasty custody battle that's ensuing. Not to mention, he's just gone through another divorce. I went through a divorce. We had a lot of things going on in our relationship. So he did depend on me for a lot. I had a child depending on me. It was very difficult and extremely overwhelming because I think both of us had some trauma from our lives, like just our lives in general. And now I'm taking on the responsibility of helping this man raise his three very young kids because of all the stuff that he has created in this world.
I'm not saying this negatively, but John has not been a single independent person since he was like 23 years
right.
old. So you've got this 40-year-old man who has never been single for 20 years, essentially, who doesn't, he can take care of himself, but also like not really.
No, I mean, I was telling him how to pay bills. And that was like, you're older than me. You should know these things. I want to love you. I want to be in a relationship with you. I don't want to be your parent. I'm already now parenting all these kids that live in our home. I shouldn't have to be doing it with you.
Right.
So that's difficult when you're getting into a new relationship, just learning each other's mannerisms and ways. And now you've got this battle of codependency going on.
I can tell you right now, codependency scares the shit out of me. It's very hard for me. I'm in a relationship now and I love how our setup is. You know, we don't live together. We're very committed to each other, but it scares me to ever get to that place of what if I'm codependent on this person or this person becomes codependent on me because of all of the past trauma. Again,
it's like, almost a PTSD situation. Like, I don't want to move in with another person. I don't want to marry another person because it hasn't ended well.
Yeah, this is how it's happened in the past.
Yeah, so let's just not and pretend that everything's going to be just...
Like, maybe stop trying when clearly you keep failing at it.
Yeah. Anytime I think you get into a relationship after a divorce, especially when there's a potential of blending families, I feel so bad in saying this because I have gained so much by marrying John. I would not give up the boys for anything. And you were just a magical bonus.
Yay. That
I love and wouldn't give up. But if somebody were to come to me right now and say, hey, so need some advice. What do you think about getting into a blended family and this and this and this are going on? I would say, hold your horses, pump the brakes, really think about, do you want to do this? Because it isn't always fun.
I would honestly give the same advice. And I've only blended, I mean, we've blended, obviously, but I've only tried to do this with one other person. And it didn't go awful. I mean, it wasn't a terrible experience. But if I could give a piece of advice to somebody exactly like you that was interested or thinking about or getting close to blending with someone, especially a very high conflict situation, I would advise not to. That would be my advice. I'm sorry
to say that because it sounds very hypocritical. I'm married to a man that we have.
But I don't think it's hypocritical family. Because you've lived it out.
Oh yeah. I've lived it out.
If I was coming to advice as an outsider, I would come to you. Someone that's lived it.
I'll say this. Okay. If you just love that person and you're like, okay, this is my person. I can't imagine no matter what. I can't imagine living my life on this earth without him or her. I would say this. All right. If you're not going to take my first piece of advice, which is maybe just don't, here's my second piece. If you just have to and you just can't not be with this person, let them, number one, heal from all the stuff that they just got out of. And number two, get into that relationship with them after the dust is settled. If there's a custody battle, if there's a high conflict situation, let that stuff calm down and work itself out before you get involved.
Let me add a number three. Do not try to reinvent the wheel.
No.
Don't try to come in and change anything about that person's life, their parenting, or their co-parenting. You better be willing to sacrifice a lot.
Yeah, I think that is definitely something. That's a good point. That's something that you can approach much later in the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Because putting myself in that situation, I wouldn't want somebody coming in to our family right now and saying, hey, this is how you should do it. Because that happened in your last relationship. And yes. I did not like it. And you know, I voiced my opinions to you on that. You don't come in when we've worked so hard because we have been in the pits of hell. Yep. We work very hard to get out of them. Don't come in and try to reinvent it. If you come in the midst of the chaos, you're just going to have to hold on.
Well, in the cliff notes to how that relationship worked out, it didn't.
It didn't.
So there you go.
So there, that's that. Just, you know, I just think you got to be patient. You got to be understanding.
And it's not all about you.
No, it's not.
We've said that from the beginning. It is not about you.
If there are kids involved, it's about them.
That's it.
It's number one. If there aren't kids involved, you're now getting into a relationship where there are two of you. You have to think about both mm-hmm. people. It's not just going to be a one-way street. It's got to work both ways.
Yep.
Okay. Get in touch with us. We love to hear from our listeners. Send us topics that you'd like us to discuss. And if you want to learn more about us and hear all of our stories from the beginning, visit our website, pastchaos.com. If you want a more personal insight into the craziness that is our lives, follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Also, don't forget that you can now stream season one of You, Me, and My Ex on Discovery Plus. We talk about sex a lot.
I'm here for it.
I just have a question. Would you rather have sex with yourself or with somebody else?
Oh, that's a good question.
Here, you do talk about like owning your sexuality mm-hmm. and knowing your body. And so I'm thinking the other day, well, are we making other people maybe feel guilty about
not pleasing us?
Or maybe there's another woman that's like, if I'm not like Lauren, then I'm wrong. Or if I'm not like April, then I'm wrong. So that was my thought process going through my head. You and I don't agree on every single thing. We have different viewpoints.
Yes.
You believe in self-pleasure and yes. lots of it. I'm not that person. And I think
that's okay.
It's okay. It's okay to just not be a sexual person.
I will say, I don't think that there's a would I rather. It's more like they're very different. They're two very different things. And they should be looked at that way. Self-pleasure is just that. It's self-pleasure. Do I enjoy that a lot? Yeah. Yeah, I really do. But it's not to say that I prefer it more than sex with my partner. Sex with my partner is just a whole different aspect of my sexuality that is just as good or should be just as good.
This is my opinion. This is my thought, listening to you in all of our private conversations and our very public conversations, is you want people to just explore what makes them feel good.
Yes.
So in your mind, if you explore your own body and your own self with yourself, then you learn the things that you do like and the things that you don't like.
Correct.
Right?
Yes.
Okay. I was very old before I figured out those things. And it has made sex pleasurable.
Yeah.
I'm still just not a very sexual person. And that's just okay.
That's absolutely okay.
I'm going to be. I'm just going to be me.
But it took you an exploration of some sort to figure that out.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I'm also now very vocal in what I want and what I don't want and what I like and what I don't like. Good. And I like that.
You should be.
Because now I know my body and I know what she wants and what she deserves.
Good. Yep.
So I'm going to do it when I want to. But I don't have to.
No, you don't.
You don't have to sex yourself. You can if you want to. You just don't have to.
I mean, I recommend, but.
You do. But I don't want to go fuck myself.
That's all the time we have for tonight. Thanks so much for listening and hanging out with us. If you'd like to find out more about the Kirks and our big blended family, visit our website at pastchaos.com.
Make sure you don't miss out on any of this train wreck and chaos by hitting the subscribe button. If you really want to get personal, follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. Be sure to tune in every Sunday when we release new episodes. We would really appreciate it if you would subscribe to and review our podcast.
And just so y'all know, we love Jesus, but we cuss a little.